The Supreme Court has no formal code of conduct, although senators plan a hearing to discuss this. It comes after news that Justice Clarence Thomas accepted high-end vacation trips from a top Republican donor and did not disclose them. Is it time to revisit the rules for justices? Princeton historian Julian Zelizer is here for that question. Hi, Julian.
Hi, nice to be with you.
So according to ProPublica, Justice Thomas and his wife took trips paid for by real estate billionaire Harlan Crow, a conservative donor. One trip to Indonesia was valued at $500,000, according to the reporting. There are other trips detailed in the investigation. Julian, does this cross a line in your view?
Well, the question is, does it cross any kind of formal line? Meaning, I think for many people following the story, there's something certainly untoward about a justice of the Supreme Court accepting these kind of gifts and accepting these gifts from a conservative donor slash activist. But it's unclear at this point if Justice Thomas, assuming all this is true, violated any rules. And there's some disclosure rules that are being looked at, but broadly, we trust justices to do the right thing, and Thomas might have been within his right to do all of this.
Yeah, but there are the formal rules, and then there are, I guess, what many consider norms of what judges and justices should uphold. Those are different, yeah?
Absolutely, and if there's been a lesson in the last 5, 6, 7 years, especially during the Trump presidency, is that we can't always count on norms. Norms are not always followed, and you will get individual players who are willing to ignore them. And so that is why in other areas we have formal codes. This is what we have in the executive branch. This is what we have in the legislative branch. It's even what we have in most of the federal courts, except for the Supreme Court. And that's where the conversation needs to turn.
Well, let's talk about a little history to this. A justice from the 1950s and 60s, Abe Fortas, took $20,000 to consult to a civil rights foundation. It was run by a businessman, later convicted of financial fraud, and Justice Fortas resigned in 1969. Now, Justice Thomas did not take any money per se, but is there anything instructive about this case from history?
Well, sure. So this was a close friend and advisor of President Lyndon Johnson. He nominates him to be the Chief Justice, and a conservative coalition of Republicans and Southern Democrats goes after Fortas. And these revelations lead Fortas to resign. And the problem was the same then as it is today. Many people would argue that what we're seeing right now is much more egregious in terms of scale and scope. But I think the problem must be seen on a continuum. And that's why there's growing pressure in Congress to do something so that we don't have to repeat this kind of situation, whether we're talking about a Republican appointee or a Democratic appointee.
What's interesting about the history is, as you mentioned, several high-level Democrats pressured him to step down, even though they knew he would be replaced with someone picked by a Republican president.
Absolutely. We have to remember the parties were different then. You had conservative Democrats from the South who were a major power in the Senate, and they were leading the drive together with Republicans. Today, the parties are more internally united, so it's a little different in terms of the composition of the caucus.
Yeah. Now, surveys suggest public trust in the high court are ebbing. We had the unprecedented leak of the Dobbs ruling on abortion. Some have criticized the late Justice Antonin Scalia for taking hunting trips bankrolled by wealthy people. This is a question Chief Justice Roberts wants to focus on, but is there a broader appearance problem?
Absolutely. And Chief Justice Roberts likes to fashion himself as an institutionalist, so this is his test. I think trust in the court is threatened by these kinds of stories, by these kinds of conflicts of interest combined with very political moment for the court on issue like reproductive rights. And so it's incumbent on the court to do something themselves. Otherwise, I think their own image and their reputation will be tarnished, or this might end up falling to Congress to try to pass legislation, which is actually being considered to impose the codes themselves.
Princeton historian Julian Zelizer. Julian, thanks.
Thanks for having me.